Hello, and thank you for joining me today. I am Mindy McNeil, and I am joined in studio, as usual, with Carolyn Joy of Joy Wine and Spirits. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Mindy.
Hey. Okay, and today we have Michelle and Anidra from Heirloom Catering. Thank you very much, ladies, for stopping by.
Thank you.
Okay, so usually a lot of our chefs, Carolyn, you know, they bring a meat dish and stuff like that. And I, you know, I love meat, but I'm trying to get away from meat. And so today it looks more like a nice vegetarian option. So we have got, is it beet tartare, ladies?
Roasted beet tartare, yep.
Okay.
So it's a play on beef tartare. Mm-hmm. So as a vegetarian option. So chopped beets with a mustard vinaigrette, some chives, carrot top pesto on the bottom.
Okay.
With smoked mozzarella, some pickled shallots, and then grilled bread on the side.
So you said carrot top?
Carrot top pesto.
Huh, cool. So you're using the leafy green part of the carrot.
Exactly.
We're going to have to taste that.
Yes.
See. That's very unique.
Now, what was the inspiration for this?
Well, I opened up a restaurant called Fish and Beer, and obviously fish was the main focus, but needing to have some items on there that were vegetarian as well. I did this for an event or a special dish, a special at Elway's once, and it was a hit, so I wanted everyone else to experience it as well.
So what inspired you to do the carrot top pesto? That's truly something I have not seen.
Basically, I had been reading about the whole root to tip movement going on, and carrot tops are one of those things that you don't think about, and parsley's not my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to try something other than parsley, other than the main ingredients that everyone's normally all about.
Okay, so Anidra, you just, I have to stop you in your tracks right
okay.
here. Okay, I've heard of farm to table, root to tip. I have never, unless I'm, you know, thinking about dyeing my hair or something, I don't think about the roots or the tips or anything.
Yeah.
What is that in the food world? Could you explain that to me
so
in the culinary world?
In the food world, that would be more of the vegetarian, the vegetable side, where, you know, you've got the greens of the beets and the carrot tops and turnip greens, so utilizing everything from the tip to the root.
Yeah, it kind of goes along with what we were just talking about with trying not to waste, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So utilize as much as you can or compost otherwise.
Yeah, and I like it. It's just a hint of that. It's not obviously a focal point of the dish, and you also have a lot of garlic and olive oil in there, so it's just like this other little component and almost like a textural part of it.
And also for the visual as well.
Yeah, exactly.
To have the green.
Yeah. I mean, you would have no idea that that was carrot top. I don't think. I mean, and it tastes really yummy.
Good. Thank you.
And I know this is going to sound crazy, but I juice sometimes, and when I do, I juice beets, and they taste like dirt, but I'm not tasting dirt. It's not a dirty taste to it. It's really good, and the whatever the flavoring is in it, like you'd put garlic and olive oil, and what did you marinate the beets in?
No, actually, in the beets roasted with garlic and thyme, peeled and then chopped, and then just did a mustard vinaigrette. So it's kind of a play off the basic things that you would find in a tartare, in a beef tartare, which would be mustard and chives.
Okay,
now with that smoked mozzarella,
yeah,
almost reminds me of a burger.
Yeah, perfect. It's like meat.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Because now how do you get that? I mean, I know that they sell smoked mozzarella, right?
They sell smoked, but just hickory or any kind of chip, really, any wood chip, and then smoke it. Cheese goes super fast, so it's probably like 30 seconds for cheese. There's so many things that you can smoke. I've done smoked blue cheese, avocados, walnuts, any kind of nut, really, pecans. So it adds just a little bit of extra to something that you wouldn't think. Peaches. So it just gives it that little more meatiness, if you will.
Yeah, I like it texturally and taste-wise. It you eat it like a much heavier meal. It's not heavy by any means, but it's more substantial, let's say. And so, and more fulfilling.
Yeah.
Good.
And really, really delicious. It reminds me, one time I went to a James Beard event, and they were trying to incorporate more mushrooms into beef because Americans eat so much beef.
Right.
It's just crazy. And the footprint for beef is crazy by the time you look at the fuel and the production of corn and then, you know, feeding the cows and the whole distribution of the meat itself. And so they came up with some absolutely amazing burgers with all sorts of different mushrooms. And this kind of reminds me of that. And you feel good afterward. Right. So
it's not that gut bomb feeling that you get.
Actually, one of the biggest problems with beef, and this sounds crass to say, but it's like flatulence, like the gases that these huge farms.
Oh, the methane.
Methane gas that the huge farms produce. I love beef, but
I'm
minimizing your consumption of it is probably best for the environment.
For sure.
Yeah, their point was if we could cut it out just once a week for everybody, because some people just eat it all the time. I mean, you go for a burger, you know, lunch and dinner for a lot of Americans, and not everybody is going to have time. I don't know, for the home chef, what tips would you have? Because I know I love beets, but I don't always like to prepare them. I feel like roasting them takes a while, and then you have to peel them, and my hands get dirty. I don't know if there are any, not that I mind my hands getting dirty, but, you know, they're all red. Do you have any suggestions for beets in particular?
You can use a towel.
Yeah.
Just wrap
or
it
gloves.
In. Yeah, gloves or a towel, wrap it in, you know, wipe it off that way.
But any root vegetable is going to be a longer process. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, it can be a day labor thing, and mm-hmm. you just have to commit to it if that's what you're into. But just make a big batch.
I noticed when you were doing the prep for it, you had your gloves on.
Yeah.
You had your plastic gloves on and stuff like that. Anita, you said you were working at Elway's and some other places. Mm-hmm. That's right. So, Michelle, were you the one who started Heirloom Catering, or how did Heirloom come to be? A little history, please.
I started Heirloom Catering. We're almost in the close of our fifth year, so we started in January of 2014. I started it mostly because I just wanted to do what I loved, and I wanted to be surrounded by that. However, running a business is very complicated, and if I could just sit in like an herb garden all day or cook, that would be great, but that's just not the reality. And then this spring, Anidra and I started talking, and she was expressing how she kind of wanted to do her own thing and have more creative freedom and get a little bit away from the corporate world. And that conversation just grew into how we could partner together, which has been, I mean, this woman has an incredible resume. She's super talented.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's just been such a great partnership. And we just started a short time ago, but the goals are lofty, and I think we'll be able to reach them as long as we keep focused on that, which I think is awesome.
Now, a couple things. I have your business card in my hand for Heirloom Catering. It says live long and eat well. So do you do any type of food, or is there a specialty food? I know, you know, I mean, right now we're on the beet tartare, and it's kind of funny because your business card have beets on them. So, but is there, you know, I mean, do you have something that's, you know, specific, or can someone, you know, if they're, okay, I need you to come cater an event, you know, can they say, I just want a vegan option or a vegetarian or all meat theme? How does that work with you all?
Well, we're driving our menu to be seasonal. So inside of that drive, we're hoping to work with more small purveyors, source locally, which is a challenge all on its own. But I think we can do it as long as we put the effort into that and the intent. We do customize menus often. That's something we are absolutely capable of. We are a vegetable forward company. We try to specialize in being inclusive, and what inclusivity means to us is that when we build a menu, you know, the vegan, the dairy-free, and the gluten-free people are also, you know, in the forward thought of that, but we also love our friends that love bacon. So inclusivity just means that everyone at an event has the option to eat, mm-hmm. and a vegan's not like, thanks for the green beans.
Yeah.
You know? So, and that's a lot easier than I think people think that it is. There's options that, you know, like Anidra just did this incredible goat cheese appetizer last week for the Denver Architecture Foundation event, and she wrapped the goat cheese balls in dates and walnuts rather than it being like a breaded option, and people absolutely went wild for it. So, yes, we can specialize menus, but we do like to sort of create from that lens as well.
Well, and yeah, and like I said, what you've created today is great, and it's going, honestly, Carolyn, I'm calling this like a pink champagne type of that you brought today. I don't know what exactly this is, but it's a nice little bubbly. So can you, it feels bubbly when I taste it. So tell me a little bit about what you brought.
So this is a fun wine. I think there's, so we're drinking today the Coletto Chiarle Lambrusco, and there are visions of a sweet, dark red wine reminiscent of soda pop. But that's that was happening in the 1970s and 80s. But that's not what this Lambrusco is about. So this family's been producing Lambrusco for about 150 years. They're probably one of the more prominent producers of it. But what they do is, and they've just built a winery in 2001 that is state-of-the-art. So it's all estate-owned and grown fruit. And they bring it to their facility. They do the fermentation to produce the bubbles in large steel tanks because that saves a lot of money. Because no longer with this production can they do the fermentation in the bottle. So there's usually a secondary fermentation that produces bubbles for champagne and Prosecco and Lambrusco or any sparkling wine. But that's expensive and it takes time. Does that make sense?
Well, it's
I think I'm confusing.
Well, yeah, because I'm just like, it takes time. Like, is it like a long process? Is it like months, years, days, or weeks?
It can be months and years. So normally when a traditional sparkling wine is made by making a still wine, you make that still wine and then you bottle it and then you add a little sugar and yeast. And then that starts a secondary fermentation, which creates the bubbles inside the bottle.
Oh.
But that process, and that's called the traditional method or method champenois, that takes a long time. So to save time and money in a larger production wine, they'll do that process in these giant stainless steel tanks.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And then they bottle the already carbonated wine after it's carbonated in the big steel tanks.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It seems like wine production has changed a lot in the last like decade, especially with corks being a little bit, I think it's going extinct, right? So twist offs are more relevant and boxed and doing different processing.
Yeah. I mean, of course, with technology, everything is changing very quickly. And so what we're trying to do is focus on wines where you have a lot of this tradition, but then there's also this incorporation of new methods and technology. Could be temperature control, different types of vessels, different types of packaging, different types of shipping, no herbicides, pesticides. So there's a lot of that's kind of going back to our roots and also kind of propelling us into the future. And that's kind of the story with this wine, in that traditionally it's been produced to be on the sweeter side, and now it's being produced to be on the drier side. And so there's four main areas, four main Lambrusco. So Lambrusco is the varietal. That's the type of grape.
All right.
And there's more than 60 types of Lambrusco, which is kind of mind-boggling. But there's mostly four types that are bottled. And this is the freshest, liveliest one of the four.
And, you know, it's funny because just as we were just talking about the corks and screw caps and everything else, I'm like, beforehand, I wish I would have taken some video or picture, but you're in here trying to, like, pop the cork. But I love that because I think, you know, when I think of wine, you know, just or even champagne or whatever, just to pop the cork, I think that's such a cool thing.
That's
you know?
Very symbolic.
Yes. And that's so true. So to hear screw cap, I know people are, you know, migrating towards that, but I like this. I like that you can pop the cork and hear the sound and feel like we're about to celebrate, you know?
Yeah, it's hard for sommeliers in restaurants because when they have a screw cap, they try to present the bottle and they quickly unscrew it, which isn't very, there's no production behind that. This bottle actually is a little bit of a production because you have a cork, but then it's also not in a traditional cage that's wired down. It actually has this little lever on it, which of course leave it to the Italians to design something different. So it's a little bit to get that off, but then you get this great explosion and pop of the cork, which hopefully we captured sound.
I hope so. Because I think about it, too. I mean, honestly, like you said, if a sommelier is trying to open this, I think of a screw cap more if I'm, you know, I'm getting my soda, You know, that's what I think. I'm not thinking of wine, like, you know, because it's an experience, you know, it's an event, so to speak, when I'm, you know, because I'm not a big wine person, but at home I started my little display cabinet and I've got my Moscatos in there and a few reds and stuff. But I feel like it's just more of an event when you do that. So I feel like I can twist a cap off at any time, you know, if I want, you know, sparkling water or soda. But for this, but I do have a question. So this particular wine that you brought today, what was the thought process when you heard about the beet tartare?
So vegetables can be an interesting challenge for pairing wine. And beets have this earthy component that you mentioned, and they also have this sweetness. But then you have the creaminess of the and the smokiness of the cheese and a pesto, which has sort of an oiliness. So I was trying to figure out, you know, I didn't want anything that's too overwhelming because a lot of red wines would just clash with all of this. And of course, a sparkling is always great because it sort of cleanses your palate. And I also thought before I tasted it that this would be more of an appetizer, so more of an aperitif type wine. But really, I think that this is, you could serve this as almost your main entree if this is what it was, because you do have all those different flavor components and textures and weight that we talked about. So I wanted to choose a wine that would cut through some of that fattiness, not overwhelm the beets, and also not clash with the sweetness that the beets have.
Okay.
And Lambrusco, you know, this is it's made from red grapes, but you can see it's a light rose color. It has this really pretty aroma in it of like cherries and oranges, and you think it's going to be sweet, but when you taste it, it's dry, and it's very cleansing. And so, and the weight, it's not a very heavy wine. So I think that that really complements this dish. Traditionally, it's served with very rich food out of the area, which is known for tortellini and creamy dishes. And this is the area where prosciutto comes from, and also Romano cheese. And ironically, balsamic vinegar is also known to come from this area.
All the amazing things.
Yes, all sorts of wonderful things. And so they don't want a too fancy of a wine to wash it all down. So this is what they drink. And especially at lunch, you can even drink this because it's only 11% alcohol.
Are you saying this is just like a total basic table wine?
Table wine, I
think it's so delicious. I love the dry and the crisp. And
Yeah, this is not so a fancy wine. It's not expensive.
How much is that in your store?
I think it's about $15.
Oh, I'm going to come back.
This is a wine that's under $20. We're going to be tasting it this evening. It'll also be great at Thanksgiving because if you think about all those different flavors that you have and you don't want anything that's overwhelming, and I've talked about this in past years, how we don't want anything too alcoholic with our Thanksgiving meal, and you don't really want anything oaky. And these are rules of thumb that we go by. Anybody can drink anything they want. Everybody has different tastes, as you know.
Sure.
But this would be great with Thanksgiving as well.
You said too oaky. All right. So, you know, I'm not 100% schooled in wine. So what is that?
So wine is often aged in big oak barrels.
Okay.
And so a lot of people like this influence of that oaky flavor on their wine. That gives it the toastiness and sometimes a nuttiness. And so it's very common for wine to be aged in oak.
Yeah, I went to Napa a few years ago, and I did see the big, we went to a few wineries, and so I was kind of a waste to my friends because I was like, I only want Moscato, and, you know, we're going to all these tasting places and stuff, but, you know, I saw the big, you know, the oak, so I see that.
And there can
Moscato's
be fruit.
Moscato's my least favorite.
Yeah.
Mine too.
I don't like sweet wine.
So this is kind of an in-between where it might also satisfy a lot of different tastes, where you could have somebody that normally likes a big red wine, and if they're a little bit open-minded, they'd still enjoy this. And if you have someone that wants something very almost sweet and fruity, this satisfies that a little bit, so it's a very middle ground wine, I think.
Great. Well, I've just really enjoyed this. Thank you all so much. If we could just get that nice little toast. 1, 2, 3. Here we go.